shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, you're listening to The John Gaunt Show. It's Shooting from the Lip with Sputnik International, where we bring you people with controversial views, and instead of trying to catch them out, we actually let them expand on their views. Doesn't matter whether I agree with them, doesn't really matter whether you agree with them. The whole idea is to get proper political discourse. Then we can have real debates. Well, that's what I'm trying to do. It's Gaunty. It's Shooting from the Lip. It's Sputnik International. I'm joined now by a man who was a political editor of the Daily Express for years and years and years. He's now a UKIP MEP. His name is Patrick O'Flynn, and he joins me now.
Shooting from the Lip.
Good afternoon, Patrick.
Good afternoon, Gaunty.
Right, whether we liked it or not, the first thing we've got to talk about, I'm afraid, is terror. What did you make of this Westminster attack?
Well, when you're discussing, you know, individual events and the police investigation is live, you have to be a little bit circumspect on what you say. But I note that the suspect that's been arrested is said to be a British citizen, but from the Sudan originally. And this rings alarm bells with me because quite a lot of the Islamist attackers in our country in recent years are people who've been imported, people who've been allowed in through our immigration system, whether it be the Manchester bomber, the Parsons Green bomber. I think it all points, a common sense diagnosis would be that our government's letting us down and the immigration system is far too lax, far too loose, and we're bringing in people who hate us, hate our way of life, and want to kill us.
So are we not checking them out correctly, or are we just letting too many in? I mean, I remember the poster with Nigel Farage where everybody said he was being racist and it was echoes of the Nazis. Was he correct?
Oh, well, I think that poster said breaking point, didn't it? And it was judged to be very controversial at the stage of the EU referendum. But breaking point really hints, I think, more at public services under strain, you know, overcrowding, pressure on housing, that sort of thing. But I think that there's another breaking point, isn't there, which is a breaking point of the norms of our culture and of freedom of expression, peaceful politics, equality before the law and things like that. And I think that when we design a new immigration system post-Brexit, that we ought to judge people on two things before they can come in. One is that they have the right aptitudes, i.e. they've got skills we need and will positively contribute to the economy. And the other on their attitudes. And that must mean that they endorse our core British values like equality before the law, gender equality, freedom of expression. And if they don't, really, we shouldn't be letting them in.
Does that mean then you would support a ban on the burqa?
Well, as it happens, I do support a ban on face covering in public places. I don't think it's purely a liberal thing about wear whatever you want. I mean, tell that to a naked rambler. clearly, that does not apply in public places. In public places, they're shared places where we have some degree of duty to each other. And the British way has always been to show your face. I think we have an integration crisis in this country. And that achieving integration where we now have, you know, diversity, multiculturalism, whatever you want to call it, is not going to happen on its own. And you've got left of centre people like Trevor Phillips have sounded the alarm and said we're walking into a crisis here with parallel communities with nothing in common. I think that the full face covering, whether it's a motorcyclist once he's got off his bike, whether it's a youth with a baseball cap who wants to pull a hoodie up over it, or whether it's a Muslim woman wearing a full face covering for what she sees as cultural reasons, I don't think that's acceptable. I think show your face in a public place. That's my view anyway.
OK, so what did you make then of the row about Boris? I mean, you know better than me. You've been in Fleet Street forever. Normally in August, in the city season, it's sharks off Cornwall. This year it's been Boris, and the story's not going away. Because even yesterday, people are saying that what happened yesterday was a direct reaction to his, and I put in this in inverted commas, Islamophobic attacks on women wearing veils. What say you?
Well, I think that's just utter preposterous nonsense and will be seen so by the vast majority of sensible British people. You know, I'm a bit old-fashioned on these things. I think if someone breaks the criminal law in whatever way, then the responsibility lies on the person who's done that. You know, we do have a specific law on incitement, but, you know, in no way what Boris Johnson wrote is incitement to anything. And the idea that just because someone brands a particular piece of clothing ridiculous, that that is an excuse for someone then to go and try and commit mayhem or murder or whatever it might be, I just don't think that should be entertained or given any house room whatsoever. But on the wider point, the establishment's out to get Boris Johnson, aren't they? Because in the Tory party around Theresa May, they're looking at his personal ratings among party members and indeed the wider public, and they're thinking, here's a threat, here's someone who believes in Brexit, wants to deliver the full Brexit, who might help topple Theresa May in the autumn. And so they're out to kneecap him, as it were, and they're clutching at straws. They're waiting for his newspaper column every Monday morning, and they're waiting to leap on anything they think they can create mischief over.
Okay, let's come back to him in a moment, and indeed to Theresa May and her future, because I'm really interested in what you're going to say about that. This is the John Gaughan Show, Shooting from the Lip. It's Sputnik International, and of course my special guest today, Patrick O'Flynn. Patrick, let's go back to the terrorist attack. Thank God no one is dead or seriously injured. But what about the reaction from people like Cressida Dick and Sadiq Khan? She wants to pedestrianise Westminster. She says we, and he says we won't be cowed by this. I mean, do we all need to join arms and sing Kumbaya and not look back in anger? Because I don't know about you, Patrick, I'm getting increasingly flipping angry. In Birmingham yesterday, you know, and there was all these new barriers and stuff. I don't want to live like this, Patrick. I don't want to live like this. What say you?
Well, I agree with you. And when they say, you know, these bland hashtags, you know, you will never defeat us. Well, I think that that is not good enough. You know, those little girls and others who were murdered in Manchester, that's the end for them. Their lives have been taken. Their lives have been thwarted and defeated. And saying just, you won't defeat us, don't look back in anger, I think that's a sort of smug, self-referential thing from the Liberals who still happen to be around, and it's not good enough. And I'll tell you what else I noticed about the reaction to the attack was, you've got Cressida Dick, you've got Sadiq Khan, and you had Vince Cable saying, thank goodness the barriers worked. Well, you know, they're all keen, aren't they, on putting up barriers to protect the political class. But they're not. None of them seem to be keen on putting up proper barriers to protect the public at large, i.e. proper border controls, so we don't have so many tens of thousands of jihadis on the loose. So the politicians' response is to protect themselves. But, you know, wherever they put a barrier, immediately outside the barrier is going to be the point of attack. And I'm afraid that's where normal people are going to be. So that doesn't wash with me at all.
Some people on the internet, on Twitter, and I'm not sure I like the term, but they're calling them the diversity barriers. But this is coming from frustration. Ordinary people are beginning, I'm sensing, beginning to get angry. I mean, I think it was nearly 70% agreed with Boris about the burqa, even though he wasn't calling for a full ban. There's something going on here, and whether we throw Tommy Robinson into the mix and these attacks on free speech, do you think we could be at breaking point somewhere along the line, and that somehow that crowd that you used to write about all the time are just getting more and more removed from ordinary people?
Yes, I do think that. I think the liberal left establishment is overreaching massively. And if you take the Boris Johnson burqa thing, you know, most people agree with me in this country, the polls show, that you should show your face in a public space, and there's no place for the burqa in British society. But Boris wasn't even arguing that, was he? He was arguing the point, I really hate it. I think it looks ridiculous, but I think it's an unfair infringement on individual liberty to ban it. But he's not even able to make that argument, which ends up with him saying, don't ban it, if he goes via an unauthorised route, as far as the liberal left's concerned, that they're now saying, by implication, you're not even allowed to say, I don't think it's a good thing, I think it's horrible, I think it's ridiculous. You're not even allowed to express disapproval of the burqa now. And the Prime Minister, when she came out and condemned Boris Johnson, specifically said it's up to a woman what she wears, and made no expression of disapproval of the burqa whatsoever. And that's allegedly a concern Conservative Prime Minister. So, yeah, the whole of the Westminster establishment, it seems to me, is increasingly out of step with normal common sense opinion and intolerant of it. And the one thing that's propping them up, however, is the unfair political system. First past the post, the incumbency factor of the two big parties means that the true views of the British public don't get represented properly in the House of Commons.
Absolutely. So where do you stand on Donald Trump? He's made another great intervention. I've got a book open that it'll take about another 3 hours before they're basically all slagging off Donald Trump and what he said, calling these people animals, rather than focusing on the fact that this man was trying to kill people yesterday in Westminster. Is he right, though, to describe it as animals? Is he right to say there's only one way to deal with this, and that's to get tough? Where do you stand on Trump?
Well, where I stand on Trump is initially I have not been a fan of Trump. I think he's gone way over the top in many of his utterances. You know, not exactly pushing out a statesmanlike angle from the most powerful figure in the world. So I haven't been a fan of Trump, but I must say I'm thawing. And what really led me to thaw was that when he visited, he seemed to have all the right people throwing a tizzy about him. That warmed me up to him. And he was much more blunt about Brexit. I'm told whenever he speaks to Theresa May, the first thing he asks is, have you Brexited yet? Which obviously gets up her nose. He seems to like the United Kingdom, doesn't he? He likes us. So and it's the liberal left with their blimp and all that stupidness that are up in arms about him. So I get now his appeal. I think he's still relatively unpopular in Britain, but a lot less unpopular than he was. And maybe, you know, there's definitely time for a bit more plain speaking in politics and for people to try and push back against the liberal left saying, you can't think that, you can't say that, that's unacceptable, you can't take part in political discourse, we're banning you, we're no platforming you. I think it's definitely time to push back against that. And I guess Donald Trump is the number one person doing that.
Could you ever see a Trump emerging in this country, or is our political system so dead set against it?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because you've got Donald Trump, and then you've got, even in France, where Macron is by no means a Donald Trump figure, but he created a sort of new party out of nothing, didn't he? And Donald Trump really, until he'd won the Republican nomination, was really the outsider that the Republican establishment didn't want. So there is now a tradition across the world of big figures emerging without the party machines. I think it's more difficult in Britain because of the first past the post electoral system. You know, it's difficult to see many MPs who aren't either Tory or Labour being elected, certainly in English constituencies, anytime soon. But I suppose, you know, you could see Boris as having Trumpian aspects, you know, being willing to sort of be a bit more plainer speaking, throw in new ideas, not minding upsetting sacred cows. And, you know, I think the public are waiting for somebody like that with a strong mind, a confidence in the nation, a bit more patriotism. I think that would all go down well in our country. But ultimately, I think the first past the post system is such, it's the beecher's brook, isn't it, for maverick, you know, standalone political campaigners.
So do you think then, going back to Boris and what we were talking about 8 or 9 minutes ago, and this attempt to kneecap him, do you think that's going to succeed, or do you think she's overplayed her hand and that Boris will be Prime Minister, well, leader of the Conservatives, and Prime Minister very, very soon? Are we in the last days of Theresa May? Please say yes.
Well, I hope so. I certainly hope so. We deserve to be, because she's done the big lie, hasn't she? She's come in saying Brexit is Brexit and she was going to deliver on X, Y and Z. And she's secretly been preparing something completely different on the biggest political issue of our lifetimes. And she's delivered this this checkers agenda, which is not Brexit at all.
Can I just clarify? Sorry. Are you saying she's a liar?
I'm saying it's the big lie when a politician sort of puts their name to one program and secretly is pushing another. I don't know whether I doubt that she's told a specific provable untruth on a specific issue to do with Brexit in the House of Commons. She's just rebadging everything, isn't she? So she says we'll be out of the customs union, yeah, but we'll be kind of in a customs union, probably in the customs union until we get out of this backstop on Northern Ireland, which we'll never get out of. We might end formal freedom of movement, but we'll still have very free movement, you know, not the single market, but a single market, all these things, not formally under the European Court jurisdiction, but taking note of its advice and ruling. So it's a rebadging, isn't it? It's what she's done. While, you know, for months and months, conning everybody, even her own Brexit department thought they were planning a proper Brexit. And her and this guy, Ollie Robbins, the civil servant, have been secretly putting together something completely different. So I think that's unforgivable. And I think in decades to come, you know, we know what conservative inclined Eurosceptic voters think about Edward Heath. Mention the name and you get a hiss and a boo. It's going to be 10 times as bad for Theresa May, because what she's done is a betrayal many times the size of that.
It's a betrayal, says Patrick O'Flynn. He's a UKIP MEP. We're going to hear more from him in just a couple of moments. I want to talk to him about Tommy Robinson. I want to know about UKIP. Are they coming back strong? Is Nigel Farage coming back? We're going to go into wider issues as well. But you're listening to The John Gaunt Show here on Sputnik International. We'll take a break and we'll be back straight after this.
Shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Okay, you're back with The John Gaunt Show, shooting from the lip with me and my special guest today, Patrick O'Flynn. Patrick, you were clearly saying before the break that Theresa May has betrayed us.
Yep.
But by the same token, lots of people think that Nigel Farage, I don't know whether betrayed is maybe a bit harsh, but he backed out too soon and UKIP have fallen apart since then and they feel let down. What do you say as a UKIP MEP?
Well, I think Nigel put a huge amount of himself into the battle, you know, just to get the referendum, which was an enormous breakthrough and an enormous triumph. And was, if not, he didn't run the official Leave campaign, but he was a very prominent figure campaigning during the referendum too. And it was a sort of 20-year crusade. And we won the referendum and he thought that was the right time to step aside. Well, you know, in hindsight, one can see that perhaps he and the rest of us underestimated the duplicity of the British establishment. I mean, it seemed in the days after the referendum victory, with the greatest number of people ever in our history having voted for something, that there was no way it could not be delivered. But, you know, the long grass and the long weeds have kind of gathered around it. And I think Nigel probably would privately agree that he stepped down too soon. But that's done now. He's still a very effective campaigner for Brexit. And I know UKIP is going back up in the opinion polls, certainly since the Chequers sellout was unveiled. And we do need to be that threat, particularly to the Conservative Party, to try and get it back on track.
Is it true the numbers are going up? And do you think you can get back into double figures? Because once you get over 10%, that is the pressure point on the Tories, isn't it? And there's going to be an election soon, by the look of it, I guess.
Well, I don't know if there will be a general election. I certainly wouldn't discount it. I didn't see last year's one coming. So the fact that I don't see another one coming, don't take too much store by that. But yeah, UKIP needs to get into double figures and it needs to do it in an asymmetrical way. You know, if we take another 2 points off the Tories and another 2 points off Labour, I guess that would just about get us to double figures. But what we really need to do is take it all off the Tories. So suddenly they're not 3 points behind Corbyn, they're 10 points behind him. That asymmetrical effect is where we would really bring massive Eurosceptic pressure on the Conservative Party to actually live up to their manifesto. And that's the one thing that most Tory MPs, I'm afraid, and, you know, there are dozens I would exclude from that, but most of them aren't particularly ideological. Most of them don't really care that strongly one way or another about Brexit. They believe in being in office, being in power, and only, I think, the threat of losing that is what would motivate the vast bulk of Tory MPs to dump Theresa May, get Boris Johnson in and have a reset on Brexit and do it properly.
How important would Farage coming back? Would Farage give it that boost? I mean, lots of people think Batten's doing a good job. Some people think he's a bit extreme on the Muslim issue. But do you think Farage will come back? And if he did, would he do that kind of effect of getting it over 10? What do you reckon?
Well, Gerard Batten is in post until the end of March. You know, he said that he would do it for a year and then trigger a full leadership contest in UKIP, which anyone qualified could stand. And I think he's done a great job organisationally with the party. He's got the finances back on track. He's always been very effective and very wise on the issue of Brexit. There are, you know, some in the party, including me, who think that the tie-up with Tommy Robinson has been too close, and that to get into sort of theological points about Islam and appear to be, you know, an absolutist anti-Islam politician, it will leave people asking, well, one, what's this got to do with Brexit, which is UKIP's main job and which isn't done yet? And two, what's your policy recommendation then if you're saying a whole religion, you know, is very bad? Are you telling 3 million of our fellow citizens they've got to give up that religion? And, you know, they're not going to do that, are they? Because the leader of UKIP says so. So it's a bit of a council of despair is the risk. I just want UKIP to focus on the issue of Brexit until that there's a decisive. We need to be the broadest possible home for disenchanted Brexit voters from Labour, from the Tories, from wherever.
Talk to me more about Tommy Robinson then. You're not comfortable with how close he is. What about the other alt-right figureheads who have actually joined UKIP? Tommy, of course, can't because he was a member of a party that you now won't have in UKIP. What's wrong with Tommy? And then also I'd like to know what your views are in terms of Tommy Robinson going to prison. I mean, was he a political prisoner?
I don't believe he was a political prisoner. I do believe, and the appeal court seems to believe as well, that the contempt of court hearing wasn't held properly,
right,
that it was all done in a matter of hours, and that the decision to put reporting restrictions on that contempt hearing meant that Tommy Robinson effectively was whisked away with no open justice whatsoever. But I do believe contempt of court rules are very important.
So do I.
Particularly where you have interlocked trials on things like grooming. And if you break the reporting restrictions, you can give defence barristers a field day to crash the whole trial. So I think the legal side of the Tommy Robinson contempt issue is still to come to a head, isn't there? There's another hearing due.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to sort of comment too much until that process has come to fruition. But in more general on Tommy Robinson, you know, he is a very good communicator. I don't doubt his heart's in the right place on this issue. But again, he's, I would say, an anti-Islam fundamentalist who has, you know, a reasonably long criminal record as well. And, you know, I don't want to be in a political system where working class people just feel completely locked out. But then again, is there any need for UKIP, which certainly aspires to be a mainstream political party, to tie up with people who've been involved in punch-ups and goodness knows what, and football hooliganism? You know, just because you come from a working class background doesn't mean you have to drift into those sorts of activities.
No, I noticed you didn't mention mortgage fraud, which is what most people mention. But of course, one could also level that kind of accusation at somebody like Lord Mandelson. So it's not just working class people. No, it's true, though, isn't it?
I mean,
but it didn't end up in court, but you understand where I'm coming from. Okay, so you would never want him in the party, yes or no?
Well, Tommy Robinson was a member of the British National Party before he started the EDL. Now, as I understand it, people around him say he didn't really understand what it was and he left it as soon as he took a black mate along, and the black mate was abused and not allowed to join. I mean, that may well be what happened, but UKIP's always had a prescribed list of racist parties and groups that prohibit membership of our party. And actually, it's been very important for us to draw that line because, you know, we've had unfair accusations that we're racist, fascist, Nazis thrown at us. We've always been able to rebut that by saying, no way, we're the one party who won't let former BNP people into it. So I actually think in the political world in which we operate, that's really important.
OK, and that brings us neatly on on, actually, in a sense. When did it become wrong to be right? What do you think of the attacks by what I would call the alt-left or the far-left on anyone who's got a right of centre view? Suddenly, everybody is painted as if they're a fascist or a racist. Is that getting on your nerves, whether it's in social media, whether it's in the old-fashioned media, or whether it's in politics?
It's hugely frustrating. It's outrageous. The left seem to have this view, don't they, that they're morally superior, that they're nice people, and that anyone with right of centre views, anyone who's patriotic about their nation, you know, anyone who doesn't just want to pay, you know, hugely high levels of tax, who wants people to accept responsibilities as well as rights, anyone who signs up to any of that, they seem to think it's a defective moral being. And once they've made that decision, it means they can treat any of us however they want, because we're not nice people. You know, they can attack us physically. They can libel us. They can do the no platforming. They can throw these extreme words around. I think it's hideous. And I think there's a certain level of cowardice among the mainstream Conservative Party as well, getting dragged along in the wake of this because of running scared of being called, for instance, racist. I mean, how did the ridiculous, virtually the ending of Stop and Search in London, sanctioned by both Sadiq Khan and Theresa May, how did that happen? How did the Tories not stand up against that? Because the biggest victims there have been young black men who've been killed by the dozen as a result.
And what do you make of the Corbyn row? Do you believe he's an anti-Semite? And do you believe that Labour is infested with it?
I don't happen to believe that Jeremy Corbyn would hate someone just for being Jewish. I do think that he is a juvenile political mind who always seeks out who is the oppressed group here. And whoever happens to be in what he sees as the oppressed group is completely sanctioned to do whatever they want, including sympathising for terrorist acts. And whoever is decided to be in the dominant or oppressing group is just hated, and you know, no assaults or attacks on members of that group are deemed to be beyond the pale. So I think it's this teenage Marxist view, and he obviously believes that Israel in particular is this oppressive country, and that has led him certainly to associating with avowed Islamist anti-Semites, and failing to stand up for common decency. But I don't quite think that he is actually someone who finds out somebody is Jewish and thinks, I'm not going to like them just because they're Jewish.
Now, just before you go, as I say, you were the political editor of The Express for many, many years, and you've been in the corridors of power. Have you ever witnessed what we're going through at the moment, which is almost a power vacuum? People keep saying to me, who are you going to vote for? And I haven't got an answer to that. It's either Theresa May, who's betrayed us, as we've discussed, or Corbyn. Is that how you see it? Have you seen this before? What's going on?
No, we're at an extraordinarily low ebb, where I think, again, that, you know, when the pollsters do these questions about who would you vote for if there was an election tomorrow, I think most people are now plumping for the one of the main two parties that they don't hate as much as the other. So I think most of the Tory support is based on dread of Jeremy Corbyn, and most of the Labour support is based on hatred of the Tories, and that neither huge group of voters has got any respect for their own party leader whatsoever. But again, it is this first past the post thing, the incumbency factor for those two main parties, is effectively giving people Hobson's choice. So they say, I'll vote for the one I really dislike rather than the one that I utterly revile. That's not healthy for our democracy. I want people to be able to actually vote for a cause and politicians that they believe in, but we're very far from that.
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much indeed. That's Patrick O'Flynn. He is a UKIP MEP, as I say, worked in Fleet Street for years and years. If you've heard what he said, maybe you've disagreed with it, maybe you've disagreed with bits. That's the idea of Shooting from the Lip. I'll be back next Friday with another great guest who's going to give you plenty of food for thought here on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt, Shooting from the Lip.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.